We'll go ahead and call the Senate Judiciary Committee to order. It's 1:31. It's going to be a short meeting today. We have floor session at 2:30, so we whittled it down to one bill. And if we get down to that one, we get out early. We have Senator Costello and new member Senator Bishop with us and Chair Coghill. Bill Walkowski, I think, is out of town at this point, and the president is probably working on leadership issues at this point, and we want him to solve problems. So we do have a quorum, though, and we can bring before us the Senate Bill 148. This is brought to us by the governor relating to Police Standards Council. And just for your information, I heard this in State Affairs. So we have Bob Griffins with us, who is the director of the Alaska Police Standards Council, and he will tell us why this should be put into law. One of the things we get to hear, Bob, is when we go back home, I heard it this weekend, there ought to be a law. And so every time I turn around, we're trying to change it. But this looks like a reasonable change, and please introduce yourself and bring before us Senate Bill 148, please.
Thank you, Senator Coghill, and members of the committee. My name is Bob Griffiths. I'm the executive director for the Alaska Police Standards Council. The council was established by the legislature in 1972 in order to professionalize the standards for hiring and training police officers. And then later we had added to our authority correctional officers and probation officers. So that is our current role. In that role, years ago, we promulgated regulations, and those regulations included what the requirements were to be hired as a police officer. And because of the difference between rural policing and urban policing, we established two sets of regulations. One for the urban officers, that's the one that most of us are familiar with, and the other is for what we call village police officers. Those are for small communities of 1,000 or less people off of the road system. So these are typically in the YK Delta. There aren't any in Southeast Alaska, oddly enough. We typically have more village public safety officers there. And that brings up the point, what's the difference between a village public safety officer and a village police officer? Village police officers hired by the community. They work for the government, the city, or the municipality. Village public safety officer is a program that's administered by the Department of Public Safety, and those individuals are actually employees of grantees who are receive funding from the legislature through the Department of Public Safety to implement more of a regional public safety officers. They may work just in one community, or they may work in a whole area within the geographic area that's covered by the grantee. So those are the differences. Oh, we do not administer the program for VPSOs, village public safety officers. We only deal with village police officers.
And those are generally contracted through Native corporations, if I understand.
VPSOs are generally contracted through Native corporations, mm-hmm. typically the nonprofit side of the Native corporations. So today, the reason we're here is that all of our standards for hiring police officers required a fingerprint-based background check, and that wasn't a big deal. For years, the major police departments all take their fingerprints. Even the medium-sized ones take the fingerprints for officers, send them into the crime lab. They go off to the FBI, and they get a records check back. Where it became a problem is just recently. The Federal Bureau of Investigation, which administers the FBI's NCIC program, decided that the police standards programs, not just Alaska's, but all of them across the country, they decided are occupational licensing committees or groups as opposed to public safety. Now, if we were a public safety agency, we could take fingerprints and send them in. In order to do that, if you're a licensing agency, you have to have authority under the state statutes to do that. And we have not been granted that authority under the current state statutes. So this bill basically applies for or applies the same law that we currently enjoy for occupational licensing, such as daycare providers, attorneys, I think they do that, real estate agents, those sorts of folks, and adds to that list an applicant for police officer or an applicant for police officer training. So those are the two areas that are added to the statutes. And then accordingly, within our own authority statutes, we have added the requirement that requires fingerprint-based background check for applicants. So I think that is this the reason for the change and what the changes are.
So, by the way, Senator Costello has a question, and we also have Kathleen Monfreda on the line with EPS. So, Senator Costello.
Thank you. Thank you. It seems it's a pretty straightforward bill, but I'm looking at it, and I'm wondering if it has an effective date.
I'm not aware of what the effective date would be. It would, if it's not included in the bill, I think it would automatically go into effect 90 days after the governor would sign it.
Yeah, if you look at the applicability section, they do say after the effective date, so it's just simply straightforward that it'll be 90 days after signed into law.
Just a comment. It seems like you might want an immediate effective date on something like this, but I'm just throwing that out there.
Senator Costello, through the chair, we certainly would welcome the sooner the better.
What would be the advantage of saying once the governor signs it, it sets it into motion for you to have the authority, but then do you have the ability, because you've asked for the ability to make the regulations that would follow suit on this? Is that something that is workable?
I think, Senator Coghill, I think that the current regulations that we have would not be need to be changed. They already require that fingerprints be taken and submitted. The problem is that we have a regulatory requirement that now we can't help an agency, the small agencies anyway, comply with. And so we're trying to help give us the power to be able to assist them by taking the fingerprints ourselves.
Right. That's what I understand. You would actually be able to do it in their place. It would be a resource challenge for them to do it, is what I understand. So you're going to be able to do the resource, but still they live under the auspices of your regulatory packages for police standards, right?
That's correct, sir.
But this is just a what I understand is just a housekeeping item that says we can help you do that because you can't stand up the resources to do a background check within your little organizations.
Yes, sir, that's correct. The problem for a small agency to establish or to gain the authority, the ability, they have the statutory authority to take fingerprints now. They don't have the ability to do it because they have to comply with several federal and state laws, including security for the information and the written documents that come back. And it's difficult for a small agency to do that that may only have one or two city employees.
So just out of curiosity, this is something you do now?
We were doing it.
And you found this barrier with the new ruling?
That's correct, sir.
So, okay. So no additional cost, doesn't sound like?
No, sir.
It's jumping through their hoops, basically.
That's correct. Making sure we keep our head above board.
So if we were to add an effective date on this, and we said immediately, and it made its way to the governor in short order, and it's his bill, so my guess is chances are he's looking for it, what would be the practical effect of that? It would be a letter to your feds?
I think once the statute passes, that our federal representatives would take notice of that, and it's all administered through our state Department of Public Safety records and ID section anyway, and so they're the ones that are kind of the gatekeepers of this. They're the ones that brought this issue to our attention not long ago. So once they're aware that the change has been made, then I think we'll be in compliance with federal law, and we could start taking fingerprints immediately.
Well, I think for me, I would probably entertain that as we go along through this. My hope is that we would at least run through a sectionals, or you can talk to us about each section.
Certainly can.
How they apply statutorily. If you don't mind taking us through just a walk through the bill section by section, and I think that'll help us get a clearer picture on how this gets implemented.
So the first section of the bill, section one, amends the section of statute that governs taking criminal history or giving out criminal history information, who can get access to it. And this is the section I alluded to earlier, that the bill would add our name, Alaska Police Standards Council, to the list of acceptable groups that can take fingerprints.
That's just surprising to me, but, you know, I guess that's the way the world goes, so.
So Section 2 will amend the powers that APSC has to include a new subsection, and in that subsection it's going to require a state and criminal history check for the applicants to a training program or to a person appointed as a police officer. So this is effectively taking our regulatory requirements that we currently have now and to accommodate the federal requirements, those now need to be in statute. So that's why they'd be moved into statute here.
So the way I understand this, not only does it give you that authority, but it also makes it very clear that you have the flexibility to do it for somebody else who does not have access to criminal justice information.
Right.
So our, that would be these smaller groups, right? Smaller.
Yes, sir. Our concern here was we didn't want to create a law that made it the responsibility of APSC to take everybody's fingerprints. That doesn't make sense when all the large agencies are already doing that for themselves, and there was really no interest in us doing it as well, especially because there is a small cost of doing it, and that's a cost that we're willing to absorb for the small agencies because it's fairly small.
Section 3.
That amends our training program language in our statutes to add a new subsection which requires an applicant for appointment as a police officer or for admittance to a training program to submit fingerprints and a fee to APSC unless it's already been done by their employer. So this further clarifies the previous section. And Section 4 amends our standards to reflect a new subsection that we're going to add in the next section, which is 5. And Section 5 amends APSC standards to add a new subsection which limits the issuing of an APSC certificate unless the council determines that the applicant will undergo a national criminal history records pre-employment check and requiring a prospective employer to submit the fingerprints to the council for submission to the FBI if they aren't already able to do it for themselves. And Section 6 amends the definitions of APSC statutes to clarify that the meaning of a criminal justice information system is the same meaning that it's used elsewhere in statutes. Section 7 specifies the applicability of the Act and applies to a person or who it applies to. In other words, it applies to folks who are applying for admittance to a training program for law enforcement or to be appointed as a police officer. And here's where it says on or after the effective date of this Act. And finally, Section 8 is simply instructions to the reviser of statutes to change some of the language to training programs and add fingerprints to that as well. So.
Yeah, pretty straightforward. My guess is the reason the definition has to be in this is because you are now having to prove your capacity in this new section of law, right?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, so sounds like a when everybody says to me they have just a simple bill, my antennas usually go up because that means it's probably something complex, but I don't see anything that complex in this. So maybe what you can do at the beginning of your testimony, there was a change in the FBI rules. When did that come down, and how long have you been aware, and you know, how long does it take you to draft this up?
Thank you, Senator Coghill. I became aware of the change in regulations about a year ago, and we identified it as causing us some problems. We had to try to figure out how we could get some of these fingerprint checks done for some of these agencies. And right now, I believe there's a number of village police officers who probably haven't had their fingerprints taken. And so that's part of why we wanted to get this done, is so we could affect the change. Now, you asked, part of the question was, when did this actual change occur?
Sure.
To be honest with you, I don't know. It was called to my attention about a year ago. I think Kathy Monfreda, who's on the phone, could probably give us a better idea when that actual change may have had.
Well, since we've actually snagged her to this meeting, we might want to go ahead and give her a chance to at least chime in on that particular issue. Kathy, can you hear us all right?
Yes, I can.
And did you hear the question on how long this requirement has been before we actually snagged it to change this rule?
To the chair, it's actually been several years. It was a result of the FBI wanting to review statutes for applicability and compliance with the federal public law 92-544, and it was at that time that they determined that although we considered the Police Standards Council to be part of public safety to be conducting criminal justice activity, the FBI did not, and they rescinded the previous approval for us to submit fingerprints and required that we amend our law to create an acceptable law under public law 92-544, and that's what this bill does.
Okay, thank you. Senator Costello also has a question.
Thank you, and this may be outside of everybody's ability to answer because it has more to do with the Department of Commerce, but I'm just curious if this FBI ruling will affect other occupational licensing groups that are not specifically listed in this statute, which includes, you know, the medical profession. I know that there are other licensing agency or outfits that do fingerprinting checks on Alaskans. Is that something that we should look at before this bill moves out?
Through the chair, I apologize, too. For the record, my name is Catherine Monfreda. I'm chief of the Criminal Records and Identification Bureau for the Alaska Department of Public Safety. And, through the chair, Senator Costello, there are a few bills going through the legislature right now that is adding one or two more to this list of that's listed under Alaska Statute 12.62.400. For the most part, we haven't had many requests to find out how other laws can be changed to allow for different classes of employees to have the background check prior to employment or licensing.
Thank you. Thank you. Any other questions? I'm trying to think of some way I can get the Commissioner of Public Safety in on this, but I haven't been able to think of that yet. So, Catherine, thank you very much for bringing this up. Just out of curiosity, maybe, Bob, you can answer this. How many at this point do you know are communities left languishing without background checks? Do we have a concept of numbers?
Senator Coghill, we don't know how many communities that fit the criteria, in other words, less than 1,000 off of the road system. We don't even know how many of them have village police officers. Compliance with the regulations has been a challenge for these rural communities. They have serious resource challenges, and there's a lot of turnover within the communities. So what we're trying to do is step up to the plate and as best we can offer our assistance. And so this is part of our concerted effort to do that. We know that there's over 200 communities that meet their criteria. Our records currently reflect 11 village police officers that have gone through the system and complied in 7 different communities. So
this is where I think the community Commerce and Economic Development people probably could help us, because they have probably communicated with most communities that would have a village police, municipal police, because they're probably looking for every bit of help they can get.
Yes, sir, they are. As a matter of fact, we've met with them, and we're putting a team effort forward on this.
Yeah, I think that's good. I haven't actually heard of anybody that had a different opinion on this bill than you have, so that's a good sign. So, and I haven't found anything in here that causes me any concern. How about members of the committee, any further questions? Senator Costello?
Are we going to move it?
I wasn't going to move it today. Okay. I was going to probably what we should do is look at an effective date issue, and Bob, I'd be interested in how you might see that, and maybe you should just go back and consider if it isn't immediate, does that help you, hinder you, make it easier or not? You know, I think we'd be willing to probably work with you on that one.
Thanks, Senator.
Kind of get this thing set up. It sounds like it's been languishing anyway. So it looks like you're already well on your way to trying to solve the problem. We'd like to help you do that, I think.
Thank you, sir.
And I was I'm actually surprised that we got through this as quickly as we did. So this is good news. I'm just going to set the bill aside, Bob. If there's no other questions, anybody else want to testify on it? I don't have anybody signed up for testimony. I know who she is. The fact that she snuck in is she didn't sneak in. I saw her come in. So, Ms. Wasserman, please come on forward. And because she has something to do with municipal leagues, sure we'll find out something about how they feel about this.
Senator, for the record, Kathy Wasserman, Alaska Municipal League. I'm going to put a little punch in here for the municipal league as well. If state agencies would get used to communicating with us, we have a lot of those lists, and I know anecdotally because I speak to communities every day. So I think a lot of times agencies or the legislature forgets to check with us on those sorts of things. And we also carry risk insurance for the municipalities, so we know who has police insurance and who doesn't. And there's another company as well, so we don't have everything. But we have a lot of ways that we can pull all of that information. Especially state agencies are underfunded.
Yes.
Not that we're overfunded, but anyway, I got involved with this bill quite by accident in going to another committee, and the other body saw that a couple of committee members kind of went askew on how they thought a solution might be handed down on this bill, which was to have municipalities do their own background checks and fingerprinting. And I was sitting in the audience waiting for another bill and starting to gasp, and my heart was starting to flutter. So I knew that I'd better keep up on this bill just to make sure that I let you know that this is a service that the Police Standards Council is willing and able to perform for these municipalities that do have VPOs. And it's at a very small and minimal cost, and I think it's something that is needed because it can help all of us, these small municipalities, all of us that are involved with municipalities, to kind of keep an idea of who is out there providing this law enforcement work in these communities. I know if I go get a massage, my massage therapist needs to be fingerprinted. I certainly think it's not out of the question to have VPOs fingerprinted. And having lived in remote villages myself, I know some of the people that apply for these jobs at times. And I think we need to be able to have this service, and I think it'll help all of us keep better records of what's going on out in the smaller communities when it comes to law enforcement.
Supportive of the bill?
So I'm very supportive of the bill.
And you did a very good job of putting the welcoming mat and the storefront to your resource at the AML.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much. It is a resource, there's no doubt about it, that the places where communities gather, and but they also gather here at the legislature, and this is one way we solve a problem. This looks like a pretty good solution. And so I'm going to set the bill aside. We'll entertain amendments and Obviously, the First Amendment probably will be talking about as an effective date, and we'll look forward to some feedback from you on that, on how that may work for you. Oh, I guess I could probably tell you what we're going to do next as well, before I gavel out. We are going to take up, we still have the trust bill that we will probably bring up on Wednesday, and that is the 28th, so we will bring up a bill on pesticides on telephone poles. We're going to talk about the liability standards on that, and new drugs for terminally ill. That'd be House Bill 43, dealing with trials on new drugs. And then on Friday, we'll bring up some other bills. We'll probably take that telephone pesticide bill and put it to work. And then, oh, here we go. My lists are way too complicated. I got them on two different pages. And on Friday, we'll do a constitutional amendment discussion, the first one on parental consent for abortion, and then HB 312, which is crimes against medical professionals, which just passed the House. And that's dealing with nurses who feel like they need some more support. So we'll probably get a little more active, but today, pretty light. I didn't think this was going to go as fast as it did, but this is fine. With that, we're going to lay this bill aside, and we'll see it back again on Wednesday. All right? We're adjourned.